Welcome back to another episode of Winning Through Culture. I'm excited today to be with you, and we have a special guest, Hannah Williams, and we'll do an introduction to Hannah in a minute. My co-host Amanda Kramer is with us. We've got a great episode planned for today. One of our main focuses of the podcast is helping entrepreneurs and leaders be impactful and relevant. This is a part of our innovation series, and Hannah Williams, our guest today, is going to talk to us on a couple topics. She is a Gen Z digital native. We'll unpack what is that, since I'm an analog native. And we're going to also talk about how making your business attractive to Gen Z is going to help you be more innovative and create a culture of innovation in your firm. So welcome, Hannah Williams.
Thanks, Tim. This is going to be a blast. I can't wait to have this conversation.
Well, we're looking forward to it. So Hannah, I'm going to have you do a little bit of an introduction, but you are been on TED Talks. Watch your recording there. You are the founder of a company called DSkills, which I think is beginning to fill an incredibly interesting niche in our world. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and the business that you've started with DSkill?
Yeah. Well, let me take you all the way back, because this story will help put some context into who I am and why I think the crazy radical way that I do about native digitals, Tim. So I am 25 now, but let's go rewind all the way back to when I was 12. So I am now the founder of DSkills, which is basically, we're a venture-funded startup helping high schoolers get an early start to their careers and specifically launch 21st century careers. And if you just rewind with me for a second back to age 12, this is how my passion for this got started. So I have this very distinctive memory. My dad was an entrepreneur. He was in real estate, and his company when I was 12 was literally just getting started. And it was very boots on the ground. I am the oldest of seven kids. So we had a very sort of untraditional experience with school. I was homeschooled. My mom stayed at home full time. So I'm the oldest of seven. My dad used to take me to work 1 or 2 days a week. So you can imagine me, I'm 12 years old. I'm a very studious student, like with traditional sort of strict homework and school. So I'm sitting in the back of my dad's blue pickup truck. We're bouncing down the highway, and I'm sitting there scribbling on my homework, like trying to get everything done. And my dad was taking me around to collect rents on properties, because that's what you did back then. You drove, you know, door to door to door. And randomly, out of the blue, my dad hands me his cell phone, and he looks at me and he says, "Hey, Hannah, this phone is ringing, and there's a guy at the end of the line who wants to sell his house, and you're going to close the deal." And as you can imagine, I'm 12, right? I am freaked out of my mind. Like, what is happening, Dad? Why would you trust me with this? Because at the time, you know, his business is just getting started. He maybe got 2 or 3 calls like this every week. So this was a big deal. Sure enough, I, you know, took the phone from my dad, and with his help, I sort of navigated my way through this call, stumbled my way through it, and we ended up contracting on this duplex, and my parents bought it. And I can still drive by that house and remember this sort of first start to the world of entrepreneurship and business. And I remember just after that call, my confidence level in myself and what I could do was so high, because I realized I'd been learning, you know, I've been part of speech and debate, I've been part of writing camps. And it was at that moment that I realized at the age of 12, I have a skill that's not just applicable in my homework, but my skill of communication can actually help me to land and close business deals. Like, it actually matters in the real world. And for me, that connection happened at 12. And you fast forward to now, I'm 25, and I watch an entire generation of my peers, of Gen Zers, not getting that type of experience in understanding how their skills apply to the real world, or that type of confidence boost, until sometimes post-college. They're not really taking their skills into the real world until sometimes post-college. Sometimes it's years before they're able to find an amazing career within their skill set that helps them translate those skills. And so when I look back at my experience as a teenager and my parents being entrepreneurs, and then sort of accelerating my journey into college. I ended up starting college at 14 and graduating at 18. And here I am now. So that's been a bit of my journey and why I'm so passionate about helping students unlock their skill set earlier in life so that they can see why it matters in the real world, no matter what their age is.
So talk a little bit about these skills, because that's, again, you know, you are seeing more of Gen Z not interested in college for a variety of reasons. Clearly, you went to college really early and got out when most people might have been even thinking about starting. But what is the focus of the skills and what are you hoping to accomplish? And how is that going to, you think, ultimately impact the workplace?
This is such a good question, Tim. So let me take you back a bit one more time. So the skills really solves a key problem that we're seeing at work. And before people's hands sort of go up of, oh my gosh, Hannah's anti-college, I'm not. I went to college. I learned some interesting things in college, not as many real world skills as you would expect. But I want to address specifically what you said about a lot of Gen Z doesn't want to go to college. And just as data to back this up, approximately 60 to 67% of Gen Z says we're open to non-college options. Now, this is huge, obviously, because this not only changes the industry of college, but it changes what companies need to be looking for in their employees, right? If someone doesn't have a college degree, how do you measure what skills an employee or potential employee has? And what we're doing at DeSkills is really setting out to address that problem of how do you identify skills in an employee and understand what value they can bring to your workforce. So there's two ways of looking at this. One is, let's take Sophia Digital, who I know we're going to go into this journey here in a second when we talk about career ladders. Sophia Digital is an example of someone I use to talk about the difference between a native digital and a native analog. So Sophia is a native digital, and let's say Sophia is in high school. So what's happening right now in the workforce, or pre-workforce, I should say, in our education system, high school, is students are taught to cram for more tests and more tests and more school. The most frequently asked question in a classroom is this going to be on the test? So we've created this education system where students are constantly focused on testing better, getting better test scores, and hoping to land in college or be accepted to college. That's still very much a mindset. Well, that type of mentality of testing ends up creating, if you can imagine it as a funnel, right? You have at the top more tests drilling for more tests and more school. And then even in college, you see kids who are, again, drilling for tests, and very few are actually getting real world internships. So what ends up happening at the bottom of that funnel is you end up with kids who I like to call fetch a stick employees. So the ones who have been so micromanaged their entire journey of you've got to follow the rules, abide by these certain boxes, you know, fit the mold and study for tests. Well, they end up not being very creative entrepreneurial employees. So let's flip the script now. This is what DeSkills is doing, is we envision a world where kids are making real world impacts early. So imagine a world where instead of kids cramming for tests, they're actually taking digital skills or the skills that they've learned on YouTube or Coursera or any of these online programs, and they're identifying small businesses in their local area that could use their skills to help achieve a business impact. So let's say, for example, a student, they're looking for what we call impact gaps, right? A local coffee shop, perhaps, that is having trouble getting people to their events. So a student might say, hey, there's a coffee shop. I'm really good at videography. I'm really good at connecting with people on social media. So what I'm going to do is offer my skill to that coffee shop of videography. Maybe I film 2 or 3 hype videos for their upcoming event. Then I pitch that to the coffee shop. I get paid for my videos and I help measure that outcome I made. So maybe I helped increase their event attendance by 10%. So what ends up happening is those kids are making these real world impacts. Imagine if you're doing projects like that from age 14 to 18 or 19. Well, suddenly you're leaving high school with what we call an impact portfolio of all of these micro impacts you've made on real businesses. And suddenly, if you go through, you know, multiple levels that we're building here at DeSkills and this in our ecosystem, you end up with kids who come out of that funnel, right? Instead of Fetch a Stick employees, you end up with these tenacious, creative problem solvers who are digitally savvy and who are excited to work with companies, identify gaps and impacts they could make. And that sort of mindset continues all the way through their journey into corporate, wherever they end up, or maybe they start their own company. So that's really what we're up to at DeSkills, is solving this problem of skill development, helping kids break the mold out of this sort of in the box mindset a lot of school has trapped them in. And also this third problem, which is on the employer side, that most of the time the data shows us that less than 30% of employers actually think Gen Z has skills to succeed in the 21st century, which we're going to dive into this. And I know this is long-winded, but it sets this context of what we're going to talk about with what happens when you have a Gen Zer with DeSkills, and how can you tap into their potential at work? Because we do have these two very distinctive categories of human at work now, and we can help bridge those gaps by really unlocking the potential of our Gen Zers, these native digitals who have DeSkills, and helping equip them for the workplace so we can create a better workplace for everybody and achieve more with our businesses.
So Hannah, I am one of very few in my circle, are people that I know that went to school for a particular, let's just say major, okay, so we'll lean into that college language, and actually graduated in that particular major. I declared it like before I started, I went through the program, I graduated, and what I do every day actually is related to what I have a degree in. I know that I'm in the minority when it comes to that for my generation. So when you talk about the individuals that are learning through this digital landscape, and I know that from just the research that we've done, right, thinking about how to retract and then ultimately retain this key talent, these key employees, no matter their generation, I think it's very important to acknowledge that Gen Z really has leaned into, when you talked about that impact portfolio, they really value and purpose. Right. So as a potential employer of individuals that would potentially have these digital skills, what are some of the like attraction items that you are seeing that these individuals that are coming out with this particular skill set and skill level are really leaning into when they're seeking employment in a particular way? Because I think that will then help us better understand how we as leaders, entrepreneurs, business owners can better structure our cultures, right, to A, be attractive, and then also to best support them in the workforce.
Woo!
A lot.
This is going to be a big one to unpack.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take you on a bit of a journey. I promise it's a journey that's going to look like spaghetti, but we will get to the back to your question. So
sure,
bear with me here. So to really answer your question, we have to back up and look at these fundamental lenses that we as leaders have to understand Gen Z through. So let me walk you guys back and talk about native digital and native analog lenses, because this is literally so fundamental to understanding what follows from this in terms of culture, et cetera. Like, we could literally have this conversation for hours and hours and hours. And when I keynote and I get an hour or 90 minutes to talk about this topic, literally what every leader says in every audience I'm in is they come up to me afterwards and they say, I have never seen Gen Z through this lens before. And even though we didn't get into specific things, I now know based on the employee I manage or the kid that I'm trying to parent right now, this is how they think. And so now I'm able to better understand their perspective, get in their shoes, and think about how they might want to learn, how they might want to be motivated, et cetera. So let me go back and just describe this category of human thing that we've been sort of alluding to. So we're in this era in the workplace right now, and we're talking about before we pressed record, we've got five generations in some workplaces, which is absolutely crazy. But the sort of hidden in plain sight fundamental thing that no one seems to be talking about is that not only do we have five generations, we actually, for the first time in centuries, have a phenomenon where we've got two fundamentally different categories of human at work right now. So oftentimes when you hear generational sort of speakers or experts talk about this, they'll talk about the differences between Gen Z and millennials and Gen X and blah, blah, blah. I do not consider myself a generational expert because honestly, I think there's nothing new under the sun when it comes to how humans think and what our fundamental drivers are. What is distinctly different right now with these two categories of human is that we have two, and I'll say that the labels are native analog and native digital. So what I mean by this is we have this generation of native digitals now whose fundamental first life experience is a digital one. And their secondary life experience is analog or the physical world. And then for the other category of human, which would be my parents, we have this other category of human that is natively analog. And that simply means that, you know, my parents' first life experience is physical. Their primary life experience is physical. And then they have an incredible amount of digital savvy, but it's their secondary life experience. So when I talk about this, often the first question people ask me is, I'm super digital savvy and I have kids who can't even figure out how to use Microsoft Word. So what we're not talking about here is digital savvy. We're actually talking about lived experience that's different. And a way I like to illustrate this is, do you guys have a friend who's, I don't know, Japanese or Russian, like natively lived in a completely different culture? Who would be an example?
Yes. My very best friend from college is German. And so she was in the States. She went to high school in the States and then she moved back. We actually went to college together and then she moved back to Germany and I get to see her once a year, which is wonderful. But yes, it's a different experience than what I have had.
So that's a great illustration. So your friend is German. So let's take this. So what's your friend's name?
Nadine.
Nadine. Okay. So Nadine is German. She obviously came to America to have some schooling experience and made some friends, which is amazing. We could do the same thing, right? We could go to Germany after we're 25, 30, 40 years old, whatever. We could go to Germany and we could live there and we could eat the food and we could learn the language. But if you ask any reasonable person, if I, you know, if I were to move to Germany, am I a native German? Any reasonable person would say, no, like your life experience does not make you natively German. As much as you try to acclimate with how you dress and how you talk and all of that, you're never going to be natively German. And I would say, you know, if you take someone who's not in another Western culture, but take something like South Korea or Japan or living in Singapore, like if you are native to those countries, your lived experience is very different from someone whose lived experience is American. And it's the same thing for native digital and native analog. So if you're natively digital, that means that you've grown up in a world where literally you view the physical world through what you understand of the digital world. And for most people, it's the opposite, right? For most of our leaders in our organizations today, you would view the digital world through your understanding of the physical world. So when you come up with metaphors or examples, you're taking your physical experiences and applying them to the digital world. For native digitals, it's opposite. And so if you view, again, spaghetti it back all the way to your question, Amanda, about what we need to do as leaders and as, you know, whether it's HR or an executive position, thinking about how to shape our cultures of innovation around Gen Z, first understand that principle, because what you've got are an entire generation, starting with Gen Z, and then we're going to have Gen Alpha in the workforce within the next decade. And these humans, because their first lens is digital, it results in some very interesting changes we have to make in our cultures, right? So just as a sort of very tangible example here, when it comes to recruiting, since you brought that up, Amanda, this is one very sort of easy thing to grasp that we should get our heads around about native digitals and how we think. So a native digital, when we're looking for a job, where's the first place that we're going to encounter your brand? What would you guys guess?
Online.
She might be asking more specifically versus just online. But yes, online.
I'm proving Anna's point as a,
exactly, right?
A native analog. It's not at a job fair, okay? So I know that part.
No.
You never know. It might be some weird situation. But yes, to your point. So the places that Gen Z is going to look when they're encountering your brand is wherever they hear about you, there's some oxymoronic things that happen. So number one, the first thing we're going to do when we hear about your brand or the potential to work with your company is we're going to your career website. We're going to your careers page. That's a given. So we may look at your social as well, but we've kind of gotten disenchanted because most of the time when we go to a company's social, it's B2B hasn't kept up quite as much as some B2C companies. So we're definitely going to your careers page. Here's what we often find. So let me pull back and give you the lens, and then we'll look at the tangible career page situation. So the lens here is Gen Z has been used to being catered to and everything personalized our entire lives, right? Because we're native digitals. We're used to going on to the Nike website and being able to customize our own pair of shoes that's nothing like what anybody else would have and get it shipped to our house within a couple of days. Like we're used to every algorithm being catered. We talk all the time about how we train our algorithms. We got to, hey, a new app comes up. We got to train our Instagram algorithm. We got to train our Threads algorithm. This is a conversation. So we're used to everything being uber personalized for us. So now you take that native digital human who's used to everything being uber personalized and we go to your careers page. And most of the time, what we're going to encounter is a statement something like, we've been in business for 100 years. Our team is like a family. We really love our employees. Here's, you know, some pictures of our building. That's typically what we encounter. And in the Gen Z native digital brain, we go, well, that doesn't say anything about me. Like, that doesn't really resonate with what I'm feeling because I couldn't care less about how old a company is or how their building looks. What I care about is, what is this position going to do to enhance my personal story? And we can go into that. You guys tell me how much you want to dive into personal story. But in essence, at the very surface level, the way we think about it is, if I get on a site, you have site A and site B. And site A talks in we form. It says, we've been around 100 years. We love our employees. We really care. We have great benefits. Well, I'm going to get turned off. But if you take site B and it instead says, hey, you, and it uses you language. Hey, you, we see you. If you're someone who loves working with a very dynamic, agile sort of team where every day you see that what you're working on is impacting the end result for our company, if you're someone who loves working virtually, if you're someone, basically, you're wanting to turn your phrases into you instead of we, that's a very simple tweak that most companies can make to actually make a huge difference in their career pages and how they resonate. Because again, it hints at this native digital idea of personalization and really trying to capture how does Gen Z think. And I'll just give a quick example here. I had a company I was working with a couple of months ago, and they applied this single tactic of changing language from we to you and really getting laser focused using, you know, ChatGPT and all this to really cater their language to their ideal employee, saying, you think this way. If you vibe with this, then X, Y, and Z. And then they listed their job description. They were able, in the span of a couple of weeks, so this is a small business. They had put out their job description with the we language a couple months beforehand, and their hiring time was about 6 months long, and it was super grueling, and they got a lot of candidates they had to throw away, and they just didn't love the experience. They shifted their job description to this language, and within 2 weeks, they had three times the number of candidates their first position had gotten, and they ended up hiring someone and reducing their hiring time by, I believe it was 6 or 7 times. So just making that one fundamental pivot of we to you made like an incredible difference in how they were speaking to Gen Z.
Well, and I think that speaks to the innovative nature, right? That business owners, entrepreneurs, leaders really need to lean into. So that I think spans all generations, right? Like as we have additional access to technology, We have to innovate. We have to upskill. We have to provide those opportunities for everyone, because the world that we live in is changing. It changes every day. That's the one thing that we count on. So when we think about the impact that technology has had on the cultural implications of an organization, whether it's 5 people, 50 people, 1,000 people, 3,000, it doesn't really matter. What are some of the ways that you are seeing leaders really need to innovate around, whether that is the adoption in some way, shape, or form, ChatGPT, or maybe it is, you know, just those simple language tweaks on a career website? Like, what are some of those ways in which you're seeing innovation really speak to? And again, it's generational. Yes, everybody has a different lens that they're coming to, but that leaders or entrepreneurs really should focus on as they're thinking about like the next iteration of their organization.
I'm going to take us down a very specific focus, because I'm hearing a lot of leaders talk about this challenge and then talk about how we can leverage it as an opportunity. So one of the challenges I hear from leaders all the time is, I do not understand how to get my organization built around this idea that Gen Z wants to change careers so much, right? Like, this is frustrating. I think, Amanda, you were saying you studied a specific program, you ended up in a specific field, you're doing what your degree set you up for, if I heard you correctly. That was not the experience for most millennials. It's certainly not the experience for most Gen Zers, right? I mean, the average Gen Zer is going to have so many different careers in our lifetime. I think about myself in the past 7 years since I graduated college. I've already had 3, at least, maybe even throw in a 4th career pivot. And that means that I've worked 150% at some organizations and given my all for 2 years. And then I realized there wasn't any more growth, time to move on. And this is how Gen Z thinks. And I can see how frustrating that is for employers who, Tim, I see you smiling. This is totally a thing, right?
Like, not gonna lie.
What's your thing?
It can be frustrating, right? It's like, I don't understand how to deal with this mentality. And we could go down the whole path of why that is, but let's focus here on the reality that it happens and talk about an innovative way to deal with it. So one thing I love to talk with leaders about, and I was actually having this conversation with a couple of leaders who are also parents and really struggling with this within their organizations with a few thousand people. They were dealing, I'm thinking of this one specific organization that was dealing with a pretty massive turnover problem, specifically with Gen Z. It was something like 40 to 50% a year of their Gen Z workforce turning over. And they're in a service-based business. So that's, I mean, you guys know, your employment and recruiting costs and training costs are incredibly high for service-based businesses. And they were really struggling, like it was taking them under. And so we were talking about innovative ideas. And since, of course, the work I'm doing at DeSkills is really focused, one of the skills we really focus on with kids is upskilling them in ChatGPT and all of its uses, because there's not enough conversation around truly how revolutionary this tool is. I mean, even though we've been talking about it, it seems like it's been the topic for the past 8 or 9 months. At the end of the day, most people are still just using ChatGPT to right? You know, a lot of marketers use it. A lot of salespeople use it for proposals. I'd be curious to see how you guys are using it at the Plura Group. But in essence, most companies are still sort of stuck at this surface level. And here I am as someone who uses GPT every single day and GPT powered integrations to train on data sets. And we teach kids to do this because it's going to be a skill and it's going to be a job requirement, you know, as soon as they get into the workforce. And so bringing this back to this idea of losing employees. So when companies are having this turnover problem, the conversation I like to have is, okay, they're turning over. Maybe there's some challenges, right? Maybe there's challenges in the way careers are structured. Maybe there's challenges in the salaries. There's all sorts of factors to uncover. However, what if we just accepted the base level fact that maybe Gen Z is just going to switch careers more often than other generations? They might want to start their own business. That polls right now are showing us over 60% of Gen Z wants to have some sort of business in their lifetime, whether that's a side hustle or full-time. So let's just accept the basic premise that maybe organizations are simply going to have to deal with this fact that Gen Z is going to move. What can we do about it? Well, one of the really, really interesting things I'm watching some very forward-thinking organizations do is they're actually using ChatGPT to train on their onboarding materials and upskill new employees coming into their organizations faster. So, for example, right now, one of the primary costs in training a new employee is having a potential like mentor, right, or another employee coach and work alongside an employee for, could be for a service-based business, 4 to 6 months, like really helping them understand the culture and the processes and all that, right? Which takes away from your customer or client experience because you're trying to focus on these new employees. You spend a lot of time and effort and money into that new training. What if you could replace a lot of that, a substantial amount, with an AI-generated sort of chat agent that understands already, has a full knowledge, like an omni knowledge of your organization, your processes, your policies, your handbooks, your onboarding, all of that. And a new employee, instead of being trained by an existing employee, is getting trained by an AI agent. And this is already happening. You tell me if we're going way too far into Wazoo land here, but this is actively occurring. When we talk about innovation and creativity, you know, think about what could be the cost savings, the time savings, if we just accepted some basic principles about how this generation is going to function and figured out operational and sort of onboarding processes that could help us ease that turnover issue instead of just only focusing on underlying problems or assuming that turnover is a problem, instead of potentially treating it as an opportunity to leverage this native digital talent that's always giving 150% effort and seeking out new opportunities on their own, and maybe only doing that for 2 years and then moving on to something else. I'll stop here because this just went into a lot.
No, all very good and valid points. I mean, there definitely is an opportunity to acknowledge that it's okay in a corporate environment or in a small business, whatever structure you have, that we can be, and I say we in the context of being that organization, can be that individual's best next step, right? So if it's an 18-month, 24-month, 3 years, whatever that step period looks like, accepting, as you said, just this general fact that that could be the reason and that it's not looking at that organization and pointing out anything good, bad, or indifferent. It's simply that for that individual's growth pattern and what they're looking to continue on their personal story and journey, that is their motive. And that's great. Like being able to just resign to say, and not resign in a bad way, but resign to say, okay, we are just their next step. And that's all right because they see a future path that goes beyond us and that's okay. So one of the things that you mentioned is about the integration and really just being innovative with how you're approaching the onboarding and the training of said individuals. It was just the other day, I was looking into an LMS, so a learning management system that actually already has some of those elements integrated into it, where I can literally write a sentence and it will give me a checklist for onboarding. Like, this is what you need to do for this, right? So it's just taking that opportunity to look for ways that are innovative to ensure that you can and do attract the right talent for the needs of your business. And at the end of the day, you have that opportunity to provide a culture where they have growth and then ultimately the ability for them to expand, whether that's in your organization or outside your organization.
100%. Yes, there's literally so much we can unpack here, but I told you I'm long-winded. It's going to be fun to try to get to all the questions.
No. It's fascinating because, again, I think that's, we're hitting right on the main theme here, which is the world's changing quickly. And there's a whole, you know, I think part of my generation looks at Gen Z and says, oh, they're lazy. They don't stick to anything. Everybody needs a trophy. I mean, there's all kinds of negative connotations in many respects. And I'm just sitting here fascinated, Hannah, by the reality that it's just, you know, A, very entrepreneurial generation, B, just a whole different experience. And yet by understanding this group of people some massively impactful ways to tap into this generation to really, as a business owner or entrepreneur, really put your business in a situation to move forward, really from a competitive perspective, from a just general business health perspective. So I'm absolutely fascinated by the reality that innovation isn't just having a ping pong table and a beer tap after 5 o'clock in your office. It's speaking a different language. So
absolutely.
So Hannah, we've talked a lot about the opportunities when it comes to really taking the perspective of understanding the individual, or in this case, the Gen Z employee. And we're talking about the lens of innovation in that respect. And we talked briefly at the beginning about, you know, value and purpose and the importance that is placed on diversity and thought and experience. And you're working with individuals that are in high school, ones that maybe are in a gap year, ones that, you know, maybe are going into their first couple of years of university or, you know, their collegiate career, really figuring out how to take those skills that they have in that digital space and then making it relatable and applicable to skills that are necessary for a particular role that they're interested in. So one of the things that I would find interesting for you to share just a little bit more, and you and I have talked previously about just the career ladder, right? So when we think about a traditional employee, and I'm calling it that from just taking all of the lenses of previous generations, it's very like one step at a time up this ladder, whereas a Gen Z or a different generation might take, let's call, a rock wall approach. So what are some of the ways in which innovation really dictates kind of how that path gets put into action, or how that personal story and journey gets started for someone who finds himself in a Gen Z generation?
Yeah. So if I understand your question correctly, it sounds like we're touching on two different things, which is the career ladder and the organizational perspective and how that's shifted and how companies can view a career ladder that's more helpful to how a Gen Z views their career. Then there's the second element of how does this even get started, and why does Gen Z want a career path that is more like a rock wall where you sort of choose your own journey to success? Which side do you want to focus on?
Let's start on the kind of how do you get to that place where you say, I want the rock wall, that it's in front of me, and how does that come into just fruition for an individual?
Yeah. So like we talked about in the beginning, Gen Z expects personalization in everything in life, number one. And number two, we as native digitals are in a world that is so constantly bombarding us with messages about what we should be and what we should do and how we're always late. There's an incredible sense of FOMO. And this is not all positive. That is absolutely, for sure. But it influences career paths. So hopefully this will answer your question. But if you think about it, if you're native digital, you're spending hours every day in a variety of digital spaces. Some, of course, social media, but you're also spending it in digital channels and communities like Discord, Reddit. You might be on Twitch a lot. So depending on the community you're choosing, you're among peers where you're getting the sample size of the top 1% of your generation. So the way I like to look at it is, and this is what influences how we think about our careers and where we should be. The way I like to look at it is, if you lived when my parents were growing up, let's just say 60s and 70s, right? Your community around you was natively local, right? Like that was your primary community. Maybe a few thousand people around you from most cities. If you lived in a big city, it might have been different. But for most people, you lived in a community where your sort of influence spanned a few thousand people. And you were in a pretty tight-knit community. And that was sort of your lived experience. Well, as a native digital, not only are you natively digital, you're also natively global instead of natively local. And your communities span globes. Your community, for example, the ones I spend a lot of time in, have people from Dubai and India and Saudi Arabia and South Korea. They're people all over the globe. And so now, as a Gen Zer, not only am I comparing where I should be in life to my peers in my local community, I'm comparing myself to every single person I see on the internet from wherever they are around the globe. And so what this leads to, if you can imagine, like putting yourself in the mind of a teenager who's experiencing that type of constant bombardment with, you should be this, you should be that, you should have already done this. Hey, this 14-year-old won this competition for $100,000, and this person started a real estate business at 16 and they have passive income of $5,000 a month. Like, you're constantly getting bombarded with all of these messages that tell you you should be better, faster, and further ahead than you are. And what that has resulted in is an entire generation that is scared. Honestly, I mean, we could go again down many, many channels of both the positives and negatives of this, of the mental health crisis and the lack of confidence and the bombardment and sort of not knowing how to filter through all this information that you're getting bombarded with as a native digital. And so to bring us back to career paths, the way that ends up showing itself is if you're a healthy human and you have a great family around you, great friends to support you, you can often channel that energy into becoming an amazing human who has access to every bit of knowledge imaginable, can leverage tools, can get the skills, can go out and really carve pathways for yourself and forge your own rock wall, choose your own path to the top career. And you're someone who thinks entrepreneurially, and you're sort of paving your own way to success. Or you might end up as a kid in high school who sort of buckles under all that weight and who doesn't know what to do and may not have the right sort of structure or mentors to really help guide them. So what you end up with is, if you're the kid who does have that mentality, they're able to sort of climb out of the information jungle and figure out a path for themselves, and they end up in your workforce, then you can expect them to be constantly thinking about, how do I take the next step in my career that's going to help me compare to my own standards I've set for myself based on all the influences of the internet that have been constantly bombarding me? And so what that ends up doing is creating a person who's not content with a 30-year career at one place, because that simply doesn't align with anything else they're seeing from all of the mentors and peers they watch online.
So do you find that individuals in that space, do they seek mentorship outside of that collective community that you were just referencing? Or do you feel as though it is very interconnected?
It depends.
That's a very valid answer. It depends.
Yeah. I mean, the students that I work with, and again, what we're creating at DeSkills is we're trying to create this ecosystem where kids do find belonging and mentorship, and they can build that career path for themselves without having to feel like they're, that kid we described, of feeling stuck and overwhelmed and bombarded. But unfortunately, a lot of kids do get stuck there. So I would say it's both. And it really depends on how tenacious you are and how willing you are to put yourself out there and reach out to people, just like it has been for all time. But perhaps now you could say it's more entangled with all of the complexities of this messaging. I'll give you just one quick example. So one of the things I hear from kids a lot, from high school students, is, I just really don't understand networking. LinkedIn is cringe. I just don't understand how any of this works or why it's important. And they look at people who have built their LinkedIn over time or their social media over time to a large number of followers, and they think, well, I'm just too late to get started. So you have kids now who are 12, 13, 14, 15 years old who are already thinking they've started too late. Mm. That's kind of scary, right?
Yeah.
Because kids at that age should feel full of hope and possibility and like they can do anything, right?
And still enjoy a childhood.
Yes.
There is, yes, right? The freedom that that provides.
And instead, they're freaked out by, you know, they're 14, 15, 16, they see peers. Again, we're not talking about peers in their local high school. We're talking about peers. They looked at the top 0.1% of all performing humans in the world. And these kids look at them and say, well, if I'm not there already, I've started too late. And it's really like, that's where my heart goes on. Again, what we're working on at DeSkills is like this balance of, let's help you get a start early. let's help you get an advantage on life. But at the end of the day, you're growing up in a digital world where everyone has to start from somewhere. And yeah, it's hard to break through the mold. But at the end of the day, you add value to businesses, add value to your communities, add value. And if you shift to that mentality, you will be able to find a career and you're going to be able to find yourself and you're going to be able to find mentors, like they will come to you. And I get to be sort of that beacon of inspiration for kids based on the network I've been able to build in a few years. But I'll be the first to say, I'm certainly not out of the woods, so to speak, in terms of someone who experiences that FOMO. It's literally just a native digital experience, and it takes a lot to shut it down. So I'll just wrap up this section by saying, leaders, if you know that that's what your Gen Z employee is getting bombarded with, maybe they've been able to break away. And there's clearly a movement toward like cottage cores is what we call it, you know, teens, digital natives who are breaking away from digital, sort of detoxing because this is all too much. They may have gone that route. But if your employee is someone who is the normal Gen Zer and they're really stuck in this constant being bombarded with messages that they're not good enough, as a leader, if you can be aware of that and get in their spaces and maybe put yourself on, you know, Instagram or TikTok, scroll through some reels every day, scroll through, you know, YouTube a bit every day and figure out what are these kids getting bombarded with. You can be such an empathetic leader that your employees, your native digital employees, are going to start seeing you as the one thing they can trust. And honestly, that is a powerful way to connect with native digitals. I mean, humans for sure, because we're all humans, but especially native digitals who don't know who to trust because of how scattered and bombarded their digital world is. If you can be that leader who is there for you and who understands your perspective and your world, but also is sort of your guiding, the guiding rock that's like sort of grounding them, then you can create a huge sense of belonging in your organization in these sort of micro pods that is honestly sometimes more powerful than for groups of, you know, organizations working only with native analog humans in the past, because your sense of belonging might have been more with your family or at home. And now you have this entire generation who really needs belonging. And if your workforce provides that, they might stay longer and provide more value for way longer than you think.
Well, and to that point, I mean, and again, we take the real daily experiences that we have at the Pelora Group, and it really informs a lot of the dialogue that we have on this particular podcast. And part of that, right, is the concept of shared experiences. And I'm very, very big on shared experiences and the ability to take a group of people that might be in multiple generations, that might have, you know, different outlooks, perspectives, views, and then put them in a scenario where they're doing something together, that they then have that as a shared common experience that will tie them together in that maybe awkward conversation because they're not normally talking to each other and they haven't had that opportunity previously. So whether that is some type of physical activity or maybe it's something charitable, one of the questions that I would be interested in, and we could go, I mean, I could talk to you for hours on this topic, which I probably will at some point, but if we're thinking about the experiences, so that sense of belonging, what are maybe some tangible experiences that a business owner, an entrepreneur, a leader who might employ, let's call 10 people or 100 people, you know, the gamut, that could potentially do that would be feasible and also relevant and would be approachable? Because as you said, you even generationally speaking, we're all human. We all have the ways in which we were brought up in this world. We all have the different constructs that make us uniquely who we are. And we want to honor that. There are a lot of assessments and we talk about all those different things that you can do, right? Because there are layers to every person. So we're making some generalizations here. But when we think about shared experiences in the workplace that might benefit supporting that generational gap and also are innovative because they would need to be, right? Our world is ever changing. Have you seen anything that has been successful or that you would share with a business owner that they could potentially try?
Yes, there's a lot of fun things that we could go into, just different activities and whatnot. But one I find to be really sort of targeting what you said there of helping bridge the generational differences, but doing something that sort of makes light of it, is to actually use ChatGPT to help different generations interpret each other. So you can actually like get a group of multiple generations together. And I did this with my family recently, brought four different generations together, which was so much fun. We just sat down, we cast GPT up on a screen, and you could do this in a break room or conference room, whatever. Cast GPT up on the screen and have different people come up with prompts to write funny poetry. So you could have one person kind of treat it like Mad Libs. So have, you know, one person come up with a reference from their childhood. Let's say, I don't know, you could take Elvis. Let's say we have Elvis. And then the second person comes up with a topic like, let's write a poem in the style of Shakespeare, but it's about Elvis. And maybe the third person adds their perspective of, okay, let's think about a scenario we could put them in. And maybe that's, let's see, what did I just say? Elvis, written in the style of Shakespeare, and the setting is at the beach. Well, then ask ChatGPT to write a poem about that. And it is so funny. It kind of, what I watch happen frequently when this sort of conversation happens is you have the older generations who start sort of commenting on, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. Like, I didn't have this in my childhood. And then they'll start opening up about stories. Then the younger kids are just sitting there because they're prompting it and they're asking more out of ChatGPT what you can get. You know, if it iterates one version of the poem, they'll like make some tweaks and have it come up with a new one. And suddenly you have an entire group of people laughing about technology, about how we could tweak it, about trying to understand different people's stories and what they bring up. And so this is an activity that's so untraditional. It doesn't have a specific outcome like a lot of our activities at work tend to have. And it really ends up sort of naturally just bringing out sides of people that you haven't seen before. So I would definitely say like something fun and lighthearted like that, that incorporates a new technology that maybe some people understand better than others, but that makes light of the generational differences, can be a really great way to build trust between Gen Z and other generations.
Yeah, that's a great example. And, you know, we've kind of really gone across the landscape of not only what are lenses we should be thinking about, mindsets we should be respectful of as we're coming into conversations, as we're looking at providing innovative work culture that is accessible to all generations. And I know this conversation was more specific around Gen Z, and cannot thank you enough for being part of that dialogue. As I shared, we could probably talk for hours on end on this topic, but I do feel as though many of the relevant points that you shared, again, just being mindful of how individuals are coming to the table, both in a workforce capacity, but also just as people, right? So having that as a lens, I can't thank you enough for being with us today. Any closing remarks, anything you would leave our listeners with as we round out our session?
Yeah, I'll just say I have so much empathy for leaders who are in this position of managing native digitals, so much empathy. I have actually managed native analogs in my past and been in the reverse situation. And until I had this sort of lens for understanding, it was very challenging. Like it's hard to get mentally across that bridge. And so I have all the empathy in the world for you, and also just complete gratitude. There's so many mentors in my life who I call my Obi-Wan, and I have my Yoda.
Yeah, I love that. Okay.
They're throwing down the rope and they're guiding me. And Chris Lockhead is my Obi-Wan, and he is just absolutely amazing. And I just want to leave us to say, like, there's so much hope on both sides. And I think sometimes as a leader, it can be easy to make assumptions about Gen Z, but Gen Z is making these same assumptions about you. And Even though they're not talked as much about, like, that exists. And so if we can have more conversations like this between generations of understanding perspective, and instead of coming to this looking for a fight, like come to this looking with an open mind, and how do we understand each other's lenses and think about stories and metaphors and things that can help connect the brain synapses to try to cross these divides, we're going to have such more positive working environments and cultures. So I'm just grateful that you're willing to open the dialogue on this and really look to the future and to innovation, because this is the most important conversation we could possibly be having in the 21st century with the pace of change. So really applaud you for doing this.
Well, thank you. Well, thanks for being with us. And we hope that you found today's content relevant and impactful. And we'll see you on the next episode.